Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. This is Steven.
This is Sadie.
And we're at the lake.
Welcome to Have Coffee, We'll Travel Sunday edition.
And guess what? We have coffee this time.
We do, and we're at the lake again.
We ate breakfast at home, and then we came straight to the lake. But we've got some things to talk about today that are actually planned out, unlike the other day's podcast that involved an unplanned
adventure,
unscheduled adventure. So, Sadie, if you want to start.
Well, today's more talking about, so we titled this podcast, A Journey of Self-Discovery, Finding Strength in Weakness. And we have a lot of people we know with a lot going on right now. And I don't know about anybody but you. Anybody but you? I don't know about anybody else. But it just seems like a lot lately with illness, with just, I guess we can call. So Friday, we went on an adventure that was unplanned that had a good consequence, a good reward for that. But what happens when unexpected things happen that become unexpected plans and you have to completely jump ship, pivot, and change your whole lifestyle? That's kind of what we wanted to talk to you about today.
So, all of us at one point or another, most of us like to do things for ourselves. I know I do. It's not even the mentality of nobody can do it better than me, but it's more of that's just how I am. I prefer to do things the way I'm going to do it. But what happens when you can't do it? What happens when you become too sick to say get up and get something to like a piece of toast or a 7-Up or
go to the bathroom
or if you need help in and out of the tub.
Yep.
So, how do you learn to deal with those things when you've been that A-type person that has to do everything yourself?
Yep. I think, you want me to use my meningitis example? Sorry for the motorcycle and the loud music disrupting everyone at the lake. It's rather rude. Anyway, so I'm going to use my own personal story when I had meningitis years ago. And for me, it wasn't because I wanted to be the person in control, but the person at the time that I was married to was not someone who wanted that control either. He preferred that you just run everything. I just show up, do what I do, and I want you to be in charge of everything else, which is fine. I had never been in charge before because, like, if you have a father who's very, I should just say someone who's raised you, who's been very dominant, very controlling, things like that. Part of me was like, okay, well, I kind of enjoy this control then. Not power hungry control.
I think
control.
You just get used to it and it becomes the norm.
Yeah. But it was like, okay, well, I can make decisions on my own. I can do all these things. That's fine. And we had three kids together. I pretty much ran the household. I also had the benefit of being a stay-at-home mom at the time. So I got to, I just got to make those kind of decisions. And we weren't really a team. So I'm weighing my words here because there's two different ways I feel about this. So while that was fine and that's what worked for us at the time, when I got meningitis, I got it unexpectedly, and I found myself sicker than I've ever been in my entire life. I could not, if anybody else has had meningitis, it's the worst headache that you can ever possibly imagine. I thought I had a brain aneurysm. I couldn't think of my words. I was throwing up, all that. There's a lot of details that go along with that. But like I said, the person that I was married to also just, like, his value was in going to work. So even though I was that sick, he felt the need to continue to go to work and didn't see me as struggling or being weak or anything like that. Well, by the time he got home the next day, I was laying in the middle of the bathroom floor. I couldn't function. They had to get me to the hospital immediately. So even in that state, they gave me medicine to counteract that headache and kind of knocks you off your butt, but I still remembered everything that was being said. And I remember the doctor saying Spinal Tap, and I just kind of moaned, and he said, well, I'm going to take that as a no then. She doesn't want a Spinal Tap. And the person I was with said, yep, she does not want that. He said, well, she could die if I send her home. She will have trouble walking, talking, etc. What do you want to do? And he said, well, we better listen to her, so let's sign her out against medical advice. So they held up my hand, signed my name, signed me out against medical advice. I got home and was still, I was supposed to be the person in control. I still had three kids to take care of at home. I had no recollection of anything that had happened before that. I couldn't think of what objects were called. I couldn't even get up to feed the kids, anything like that. Thank God my mom came over for like the first 24 hours, and just they gave me medicine basically to just help sleep it off, and she took care of the kids during that time, because I don't even remember any of that. All I know is that when I came out of it, I had to relearn words. I had to, you know, I had to learn sentences, how to talk, all that kind of stuff again. And that's terrifying, to give up that control for someone else. But
a lot of trust.
Yeah. But I also, so in saying trust, I didn't trust the person I was with at the time that they were going to take care of the kids or my needs, and they didn't. So I felt like I fought my way out of the darkness by myself. And I'll talk about more later about how that became an unexpected gift. But that's just one of those things that I was fine. We had an appointment we went to that morning, and I had woke up with a headache. By the next morning, I was in the hospital. And it was a week. It was weeks of recovery where I couldn't do anything. I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't drive, things like that. So what do you do when something like that happens? What do you do when it just comes out of the blue and then your life, you know, takes a turn that you didn't expect?
Yeah. Well, in our case now, I would, as they say, move heaven and earth to make you better. But in your case back then, yeah, you didn't have that.
My recovery would have been completely different had you and I been together. And I think
I would have left. I would have made sure you were in the hospital and stayed put.
Yeah. And yeah, my recovery time would have been much shorter. But, and I'm not saying that to blame him, because he did what he knew how with the tools he had at the time. You don't always have somebody by your side that knows what to do or is capable of taking care of you. So somehow people have to find the strength to just push themselves forward.
Maybe there's a part of you that knew better things were coming.
Yep. Well, that's part of what, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but it also affected, you know, I mean, that's where my fear of talking came from. I couldn't think of my words. I still can't think of my words when I'm super stressed out or things go wrong. And that's where my fear of podcasting came from in the first place, because you're able to talk off the top of your head, whereas I have to write it all out. And I, you know, it's like, well, what are people going to think if I'm stammering over my words and I can't find the right word? I finally figured out it's my calling, it's my duty to help you guys through things, no matter what it is. So I really don't care what people think if I have a difficult time thinking of my words, or it takes me a little bit longer to get them out sometimes. That's who I am. It's a part of who I am, and I need to learn to hone in on that as a strength and not a weakness.
Yeah, it's a good lesson in adaptation.
Yep. Okay, so what else? I mean, we have somebody that we know and love very much right now who's struggling, who is that type A personality, who's always been in control. And I admire her for the strength and tenacity that she has for handling everything all at once. You talk about the ultimate multitasker. Her brain has to have 57,000 tabs open at one time, and she's able to think of everything at one time. But she suddenly had a freak accident and had to have surgery and is now laid up. So as she sits in the chair or the bed or wherever she's at, she's non-weight-bearing now for the next 6 weeks. Recovery time is up to 6 months. She's not somebody you keep down. She's not somebody who relinquishes control and just says, okay, well, take care of me. I'm just going to sit back and relax. So I've gotten to see a different side of her just yesterday, that it breaks my heart to see her like that. But I also know so is the person taking care of her, who's never had to be in that role before because she's always taking care of both of them. And I'm not saying he doesn't do things. That's not what I mean at all. I'm saying, like, for somebody that's type A, just to hand over, okay, you figure it out, let's go. That's not even realistic to expect that that would be the case. And both sides, you know, they both struggle. So.
Well, I think with her, her inner strength comes from the very core.
Yep.
Of who she is. She's had to be that way probably
since
her whole
she was
life.
A child.
Yep.
Yep. I think her father struggled with alcoholism and stuff too, and she had to grow up before she needed to, and that's just how she stayed. She has a hard time bringing down her walls. So
the lesson in self-sufficiency and reliancy.
Yeah.
And self.
Yeah. I think all of us have difficult times letting down our walls at times, and until I met you, well, I met you a long time ago, but until you and I were together, I didn't really understand the importance of letting my walls down. Even when we were first together, I didn't take my walls down. Every time we would fight or argue about anything, my walls went right back up. So, and I think it's taken us 20 some years for you to, my walls come down way easier than they used to.
I think it's just a middle of a matter of being in that moment, having that inner voice.
Yeah.
Questions what you're saying and doing is right. And if you have that other person as your counterbalance,
yep.
Says, hey, I just said something stupid.
Yeah.
Let's fix it.
So I think patience is the first key in finding strength and weakness. Being patient on both ends of that. Being patient as the person who needs to be taken care of. And I'm talking physically, spiritually, emotionally, whatever you're facing. I think finding grace in that moment. We looked up the phrase grace, and it means courteous goodwill. Sometimes that person is showing you grace and saying, here I am to help, what can I do? They're showing that courteous goodwill, and they're willing to do anything to help you, but you still have to take down your walls and say, you know, and that's just being, it's hard to say, I need help. Sometimes you're forced. Like with her, she literally can't get out of the chair or the bed or anything without help. So I would find that very difficult. I know when my back went out a few years ago, it was the same type of situation, except once I was up and you helped me get out of the chair, even to go to the bathroom. I had to have help getting out of the chair.
Yeah, it was that initial.
But I could still use my legs. I can't imagine, like, not being able to do anything for yourself. And I would completely understand the frustration and even the anger at why did this happen. No matter how small it is. I mean, if we lose someone, if there's a catastrophic illness or an accident, something like that, we're all going to have those moments where we ask God, why are you letting this happen to me? But sometimes I think we're shown things and we're put through things so that we can help others too.
Yeah, I think there's that immediate blame reaction.
Yeah.
You're instantly looking for something other than your own self and why it happened.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you did that to yourself. Or you know, whatever the case may be, you want to figure out the details.
Yeah. Even if you're in an accident, you're going to, you know, if it's somebody else's fault and it ruins your life, you're going to blame the other person. For instance, if it's a drunk driver, obviously that person's going to be the one at blame. But let's say the drunk driver also lost their life. You've lost someone. Your life changes in whatever way. You can be angry with them all you want, but you're still left with, hey, I'm paralyzed now. Hey, I lost so-and-so. You know what I mean? The blame only goes so far. It's what you do with it. It's the resiliency that you show. It's how you gain that strength from weakness that matters in the end.
Yeah. How strong are you in that moment to get to the next step?
Yeah. And to be humble enough to say, like, you're very humble with me, so I have no problem saying, well, I do sometimes. I still fight it and say, no, I can do it. No, I can do it. And then there's sometimes that I say, you know what? I need help. So.
Wow, and that's been harder for me too.
Yeah.
In all the years that we've been together, learning to just accept the fact that, hey, maybe I'm not okay enough to do this right now.
Yeah.
Maybe because I have the stomach flu, I should let her take care of me.
True.
Or like that time when our oldest was little, and really little, and I was getting out of the bathtub, and she came in at the same time, and I had fallen and mm-hmm. cracked my skull on the wall, and went splat. I actually was combative for a second.
Yep. He was going to do it all himself.
I got it. Let me alone. And really what happened was I was trying to get out and our little one was underneath me and I was trying to fall in a way that didn't include landing her on top of her.
Yeah.
But in the end ended up hurting myself and she got up and went away and was fine. And
yep.
I was not. You're just standing like, what do I do? Where do I go? I can't pick you up, but I can pull you to safety.
Even when I think you and I, so the biggest lesson I think you and I ever learned also was you have always been my protector, my provider. Like, I didn't have that the first time. So first I had the person that raised me that's too controlling. I wanted somebody that's not controlling me, that doesn't want to tell me what to do and just wants me to be me. So I was married to the opposite. I chose to marry the first time somebody who was, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I've called him a doormat before because he just lays down and was like, whatever you want, it's fine. You make the decisions. So at first I was like, yeah, this works. This is great. I have control. Nobody's going to control me anymore. What I didn't realize is how controlling he really was by doing that. It's like every decision I made was wrong anyway. So he still made me feel like a piece of trash because I made the wrong decisions for us. But I didn't have a team player. I didn't have anybody. I never felt safe. There were times that's where I learned to drive in the first place because I didn't even want to ride in the car with them. I just, that trust factor wasn't there. I still, I would ask my parents. Like, he might tell me how he felt about something, and then I would still ask my parents as an adult, what do you think about this? There's a Bella doggie over there and a black Bella. There's two golden doodles, sorry. Again, distracted by dogs. Anyway, so, and then I met you, and you're my protector. You're not controlling. You wanted me to succeed, and I didn't know how to handle that at first either. But I still, like, you only wanted what was best for me.
It's about forming that near-perfect partnership.
I'm the man of the house and this is the way this goes. And you didn't. You learned from his mistakes and learned from your mom and your grandma. You learned compassion and how to be soft and gentle and,
I didn't really follow in the first time.
Oh, thank God. So I have the perfect combination of a man who's strong and willing to be my protector but also break himself apart and cry with me and be like, this is the humble, gentle side that you need the most, and that's what I'm most appreciative of.
And I've learned a lot too though over the years. When you and I first got together, I became an instant dad and had nothing really to go off of except my own experiences.
You walked in with three kids who were in the middle of a messy divorce and had to just kind of step in with no experience of raising kids whatsoever.
Fun times. And there were, though. But I also, at the same time, I wish I could go back and maybe not be so rigid, like when we were at the grocery store and I made him walk in a line.
Yeah.
Don't touch anything, which, that probably was okay. Like, don't touch stuff part.
It's like we use the best and worst of our parents. Like, there was a lot of things we avoided because we didn't want to be controlling like our parents were. But on the other hand, we still wanted them to behave and not be little assholes.
Yeah.
So that's where the, quit touching stuff. Quit yelling and screaming. Get your butts in order. And
be respectful. Don't cause problems.
Yeah.
Then so we maybe had a happy medium. Children.
Yeah. different there. I remember you asking me one time, well, what do you do in this case? I don't know. My other three never did this. So we just wing it. The first time that our oldest together ever, like, I think we had to swat her on her butt, and she was not even 2 years old, and turned around and went, well, that didn't hurt.
It's like that old Bill Cosby joke about Jeffrey.
Yes.
Jeffrey. Sit down, Jeffrey. Be quiet, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, sit down. Be quiet.
So let's talk about the word mercy also. And I looked that up. I know what mercy means, but I looked it up to see what the actual definition is. And it was compassion or forgiveness shown when it's, I can't read my writing, within one's own power to punish or harm. So a lot of times we need mercy also, along with grace and along with humility, to get through those tough times that were unexpected, that happened to us out of the blue. And you were going to talk about, you can talk a little bit about Rob and Steve too, but as far as my ex, I realized when he was recently diagnosed with cancer, I know we've grown a lot. We've been in the same room when grandkids were born, and it kind of goes back and forth. There's not unforgiveness on my part, but there is on his part, and there's still some issues. We might be in the same room, things are great. He goes back home, and then I get trashed on Facebook or wherever else, or to the kids or whatever. Well, that's never been...
In his part, though, and I'm not defending him whatsoever.
In some ways, he deserves to be defended, though. I mean, he's...
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I mean, like... If you're not emotionally able to, yeah, you know, be in a marital relationship, you're going to have problems. You're going to be that person like, oh, I don't know why she left me, after 20 some odd years later. Really? Yeah. Are you sure you don't understand what happened?
Yeah. But he was emotionally incapable of understanding most of what a marital relationship should be in the first place. But also, that's why he can't let it go after it's been, I know the flies are biting, after it's been almost 25 years, he's still stuck in, but she left me. It wasn't yesterday, dude. It was 25 years ago. So I feel for him, though. I mean, I've got enough compassion to realize that that's got to really suck. He's incapable of that, like you said, so
it sucks. You can't get more beyond that. You're that oblivious to,
yeah,
whatever word you want to use there, but it's like, at some point, you, I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking it because I'm the opposite of that. I would question, like, what part did I have in that? What, mm-hmm, where did I go wrong?
I think a lot of people show anger first, and then, you know, as you deal with a stage of grief, even with divorce, then you go back after, you know, a while, and you start thinking, okay, maybe they weren't all to blame. What could I have done? I think that I didn't even really face that part of it. I just blamed him, and then there were things that happened along the way that shouldn't have happened with the kids, and him making me pay. So I stayed angry, but I realized as we've grown as a couple, as we've dealt with things with our now adult children, when he was diagnosed with cancer, what was my first reaction? I fell apart. You met me in the driveway, and you knew that I was upset, and I fell into your arms, and I cried. Not many husbands are going to allow their wife to do that over their ex-husband.
Seems like a lot of people go through life literally hopping from one frying pan to the next. And that was our life when you and I,
yep,
got together. We learned a lot in those first few years. How we still learn.
Oh,
but
yeah,
now the learning curve is on the other end of things. It's more about being the age we are, what do we need to do to take care of each other? Our parents are older.
Yeah.
You know, my mom is 66, and now, well, I shouldn't say now, is without a spouse, but that spouse that she was married to was very controlling, very
abusive.
Verbally abusive. I doubt there was physical abuse on that part that we ever saw. I think my mom would have put up with that.
Verbal and emotional abuse, you know, is just as bad as physical, though.
And my brother and I think we got all three of those. So,
yeah.
And it's, I still did not let that really control me as I became a husband and a father. Ooh, that's a tick.
It's a tick with a white spot. Already.
So anyway. We've learned to adapt. We've learned to, you know, become. And I knew at an early age, I remember looking at my mom, or just, she came in to say goodnight to us before bed, and I'm like, there sat my dad in the living room, never coming in to say goodnight, never showing any physical sign of love. Maybe once in a blue freaking moon was there ever kind of any emotional, positive emotional good job, or, you know, attaboy, or here, have a hug. I didn't have that. I got all that from my mom, and I promised myself early on I wouldn't be that way, but there are still things that are kind of like a crop or a seed within you that has a delayed timer,
mm-hmm.
that
it triggers,
does come out at some point, is the thing that you promised wouldn't happen, but does happen, maybe not to the fullest degree, but, you know, there are things I did and said to all of our kids, because we have 5 total kids, and but mind you, none of our 5 kids were really physically abused. Now, there was things as a father I said that I'm like, hey, man, that was probably not okay to say. But I always made sure I went back after the fact. And
it's not about not making the mistakes. It's the matter of realizing, hey,
you grow through those.
This is how you, yeah. So no matter what you're going through like that, or no matter what you're facing, you can choose at any point to not be like that. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that are just repeating. It's a family history of toxicity, and women too. I'm not just saying men, but I'm talking more like physical abuse and just being rough. And men have this concept that they have to be rough and mean and whatever, you know, gruff all the time and never let your walls down. And that's not what your wife needs from you.
And choosing not to be something is all you have to battle. You have to constantly reinforce that.
You have to work
that.
At it.
You know, let me rewind a little bit. When my dad died, my brother and I, well, this actually started years before that, pre-COVID even, became a breaking point when that part of my family was going through some stuff, and he finally realized, he's like, you know, something's not right with this picture here. So fast forward a little bit, we kind of come together, but we're not quite together yet. My dad dies, our dad, sorry. I thought for sure, I really wasn't sure how my mom was going to handle things. And after being controlled for so long by our dad, there was some residual. Like, my mom didn't know how to, you know, give herself permission to do certain things. And now I think she's fully aware. But now it's like, she doesn't have that counterbalance, being a spouse, to, you know, weigh the good and the bad with. And she, when we were down there, remember when she was talking about how she wanted to buy a desk, but she felt like she needed to ask permission.
She called your brother and said, what do you think? Can I buy this desk?
My brother's like, Mom, you don't need to ask me to do that. It's your money. Buy what you want.
But it's still about unlearning those toxic traits and those, like, it didn't even dawn on her that, hey, I can make this decision myself. And on the flip side of that, the very first time we went down there to see her and we bought her a coffee, we were standing at Starbucks, and we bought her a chai latte, and she was grateful for it, and then she's like, I can buy myself a chai latte. I can buy myself a chai latte anytime I want to at Starbucks. And I saw this, like, you know, it was her first step in saying, wait.
Instantaneous growth.
Yeah.
Realization of growth. Like, hey, I got this.
But, yeah, we talked to her not too long ago. It's been, what, a year and a half almost.
Yeah.
And we talked to her not too long ago, and she's like a different person on the phone now.
Funny. She has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
There's a side of my mom I thought I would never see. Really.
And it's not, she admitted that, like, she calls your brother once in a while and says, I'm mad. I am so mad at your dad right now.
No,
she doesn't know what to do with those feelings.
That post-death death feelings come out sometimes, and when you least experience it, and it's like, wait, I don't have to feel that way right now. Why am I going through that?
But they still, they come up and they arise, and you need to deal with them.
That's part of the trauma, too.
Yeah. You gotta work your way through it, though, and that's what I figured lately. Like, all this stuff's coming up for me, but it's about not being stuck in it. Sometimes when you relive it and you start talking about it, you tend to get stuck where you're at. It's hard to move past it. You get depressed. You get all these feelings that come back, but then that's when you need to distract yourself. If you listen to my podcast from Friday, I talked about things to get yourself out of a funk, and it's distractions. It's dealing with the trauma, but then learning how to still move on and move past that. So, and I think, well, even with your bio dad, he just recently faced his own mortality. We almost lost him a few weeks ago. We don't have a relationship with him.
That was a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Like, a man that was in my life when I was born for 6 months and then took off and continued his philandering, only to be reunited with him when you and I were first together, to find out everything everybody had ever told me was true. And that's one of those, like, I had to learn it for myself. And there were some good things, but some also a lot of bad things. But so in essence, when his mortality came to light, it's like, there's a good chance he's not going to survive this. Mm-hmm. And he still might go downhill. But that, in my mind, I was already like, I'm going to lose two fathers in my lifetime. One that created me and one that raised me. Neither I had a really good relationship with. But yet there was still that emptiness inside. And you know, the problem with that is there's always been that dad box with question mark and a mom box with hearts all over it, and a brother that had, you know, like footballs and baseballs. You know, I had filing systems for everybody in my life, but the father box had always had a question mark because there was usually nothing in it but anger and resentment and fear. And at least with the one that raised me, the other one was just invisible. It was a clear, empty box where there was no, I could see through it. That's because there was no substance to the relationship.
But there's still a question mark in what could have been. Yeah, I mean, or regrets.
At least, you know, with my sister, that there was a relationship there. But, you know, when we were together back when our oldest was a baby, had he not done the things he did, and were we not found out the things that he had did, things probably would have been different.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, when you do certain things, you're out.
Yeah.
That's a conversation for another podcast. But, you know, trust goes a long way within a family.
Yeah.
And once you break it, it's hard to come back from that.
Yeah. Which is also difficult when you have aging parents. I mean, sometimes you have traumas from childhood and throughout your lifetime, and then all of a sudden, in my case, I'm one of the only kids on one side of my family for anybody to take care of. So what happens if you have trauma and you break those family bonds? Like, a lot of families don't even talk to each other. What happens when you're one of the only kids left to take care of a parent, but maybe those bonds are broken? And then how do you still have to take care of that parent. I mean, there's so much that you don't think about when you're younger as far as when you get older. Recently, we came across a realization. It's like, we're the next generation now to be the older ones. We have aging parents, and, you know, what happens when you are the ones that are left someday? It's just a weird thing to think of. Like, how did we get here? We've been together almost 25 years, and it feels like just yesterday sometimes. We have adult children
that are going through.
Serious medical issues and some PTSD and mental health issues because of her dad and because of a lot of things that have happened to her. But it's hard to watch your kids go through that too. So sometimes you're a caretaker, and not only your aging parents, but your own kids. I mean, we're kind of that middle age where we're taking care of both ends of that. Our kids are still young enough that they need our help, and most of the love to, you know, unconditional love to, even if you screw up, I'm still here.
You almost feel like you're on a constant swivel.
Yeah.
Kids need help. Nope. Now the parents need help. Nope. Now, and at some point, it's like, wait a minute, I need help.
Yeah. And it makes me realize, you know, our parents at one point felt that way about us when we were younger, too. And I can understand why they say, you never stop worrying no matter how old your kids get. And that brings up a good point, too, when we were talking. So I have a doctor that worked for us years ago, and he was one of the funniest. He was quiet, but he was funny. He was kind. He was so compassionate and just so sweet. And I see on Facebook, like, it's just a little bit over a year ago, that he had tried to kill himself. He was an alcoholic, still trying to go to work and hide it from everyone else.
Functioning.
Still functioning alcoholic. And he basically, because he's a doctor, knew exactly where to cut himself. He cut his carotid artery, and I don't even know all the details, but it was a horrific, horrific suicide attempt that he should not have recovered from. So, you know, he basically kept it from everyone, and then he took a shot. After he did recover, he got out of the hospital, got himself into AA, and he posted on Facebook and told everyone that he worked with what exactly had happened so that he could share with others, you know, and help them along in their journey. Because, like, for me, I'm thinking, if he couldn't hold it together, like, he's one of the most put together people that I know. How could he have been suffering and none of us have known this? So he shared his journey. And I just saw on Facebook this morning before we came to the lake that he just hit his 1 year of sobriety. And the strange thing was, he showed up at his AA meeting where they celebrated him, and in walked one of his PAs that he works with at the hospital that he had no idea was suffering, that also is now an alcoholic and is fighting their own suicidal tendencies. And it's like you said before, I mean, here's these people that, like, you have this diagnosis and you face all these fears, whether it be, I have a friend of mine who's a psychologist who recently reached out to me and said, hey, I'm drowning. I have all this stuff going on in my own life, and I'm barely keeping myself together. She didn't need to talk to another psychologist. She didn't need to hold herself together. She needed to reach out to me as a friend and unload and say, hey, it's my warning sign that I have had enough and I need help. What about those doctors that we rely on so heavily to fix us? You go to your doctor and be like, doctor, doc, I'm a mess. Please fix me. What about that same doctor, like I said, that's the alcoholic that just tried to kill himself?
Who fixes that doctor stored all that stuff up and has no outlet?
They take all of our stress. The psychologists, think about through COVID and through everything else, those psychologists listen to that all day long, sometimes 7 days a week. There's got to be an outlet for them when they go through their own stuff. They're taught that to know all the answers and to give you all the answers to pull you through your own demons. What happens to you when you can't hold that anymore? So it's just kind of a wake-up call that we never know what other people are going through. So by using that grace, that mercy, that humility, you know, we can help others find strength in their weaknesses too and pull them up out of the darkness.
Love.
Yeah. My cousin Chris, I've talked about this before, she went through a horrible divorce, and I don't know her past story with all that, but I know it was pretty traumatic, and it took her years to be able to trust again. And she finally just got married here not too long ago, within the last, I don't know, she finally fell in love, they finally just got married. But so she was living her best life. She finally was dealing with all that trauma from her past and was like, this is what life is supposed to be like. They started hiking. They live in Colorado, so they were, you know, going to the top of mountains all the time. And one day, she took off in the morning, and they were halfway up a mountain, and her legs collapsed and gave out, and she had no strength left in her body. And after months and months and months of trying to figure it out, going to Boston to figure all this out, because nobody could figure out what was wrong with her, she has a rare form of ALS, and she's now facing a terminal illness and her own mortality. And, you know, her husband has become her caretaker out of the blue. He didn't sign up for that when they got married. You didn't sign up for, well, you're the exception. You signed up for that. I signed up for that. there's a lot of spouses that don't make it through things like that because that's their first thought is, I didn't sign up for this. This is not what I wanted. I want to go travel. I want to do all these things. And that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That right there is a true sign of grace and humility. And
yeah.
Going into a relationship with somebody knowing that life will happen at some point, the life that shows one's mortality, and you have a choice, like, no, I didn't sign up for this, I'm out, or love that person like you promised in your vows.
Yep.
Till death do us part.
No matter how hard it is.
And then, you know, and that's when you hope, well, shoot, I hope there's an afterlife that, you know, we can pick up, you know, and however that story plays out.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Well, I mean, that's what I want. I always feel like life is too short. That's one of my biggest fears, if we're being honest and we're talking about all this raw, you know, unexpected things. My biggest fear is having a stroke or Alzheimer's or dementia where I don't remember who you are. I've already forgotten once when I had meningitis and had to learn that. No, but I can't imagine a life where I don't know who you are and don't remember us. So, if I'm being honest, that's my biggest fear. And sometimes it's in those moments that we discover who we really are. It's when you're dealing with your trauma, when you're dealing with unexpected events that happen. I think that's the perfect time. Even though it's hard, I think it's the perfect time to sit down and self-reflect and learn self-discovery. The person we were talking about earlier, you know, she's stuck in the middle of her, like, this is one of the hardest things I've ever gone through in my life, but maybe, hopefully, she'll learn how to help others through this same situation. I have no doubt, and I'm not being facetious, I'm not even going to say names, but you know who you are, and if you're listening to this podcast, I have no doubt that you'll turn this into a positive, and you've already got all the equipment for your specific accident that happened. Not a lot of us would have thought all the things through that you did and the list that you've made. And she's going to end up turning this into more of a, like, okay, now I know this person who went through this. Look at these things that I did. These are the helpful things that, you know, that helped me get through it. This is what I did for my mindset and my body and whatever. And she never ceases to amaze me, the strength that she actually has. I think she just has forgotten that she actually has it. Yep. And I believe me, I completely understand it would be the same way. I mentioned it to her yesterday, our disability claimants. When they come in at my office, they often have a medical appointment for whatever illness they're facing that they're filing disability for, but they also have a psych appointment. And it's because there's such a strong mind-body-spirit connection to every illness that we don't often stop and think about that, how it affects the rest of us. You just think, okay, I fell, I had surgery, you pieced me back together. Here, go sit in a chair for the next 6 weeks and don't move when you're used to going 24 hours a day. How is that going to affect your mental health? It's going to drastically affect your mental health.
On the one side to healing.
Yeah. So sometimes out of that, those questions and in finding strength through weakness, we also discover unexpected gifts out of it. They become unexpected gifts. So I know, like, menopause is not exactly one of those, but through all the changes and all the hormonal changes and all that and everything I've been facing, the unexpected gift for me has also been that it's awakening me to realize what I actually want out of life and the person I don't want to be anymore. It's almost brought up all that negative stuff. It's like I'm trudging through the mud and the, you know, trying to fight my way to the top again. But if you look at that as an unexpected gift of, I finally have the chance to just be me. I don't have kids that, I mean, they still rely on me, but they're not home with us. I have time now to figure my stuff out once and for all. And I choose to see that as a gift instead of just, you know. Same thing with your dad dying. The unexpected gift out of that is we got your mom and your brother back, and you got your mom back in ways that you never expected to get her back.
No, it was,
she's been able to heal.
Some very questionable uncertainties there that, like, the turn of events, I'm like, okay, things could go a lot of different ways here.
Yeah.
You know, and to be where they're at now, it's, you know, and I'm happy with the course that we're on.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And we might not have seen that a year ago, though. Mm-hmm. So sometimes hindsight is 20/20 or whatever they say. Even in Daryl's diagnosis, I think it woke me up to realize that life is too short. And I realized that when I was more interested in praying for him and begging him to still be here because our kids need him, I want them to, you know, they had a bad relationship with him, just as far as not talking to him. There was just some, you know, bad blood there. They've put that aside. Josh has moved up to help take care of him, and I'm so proud of him. Even in that, that was a gift. A gift that I didn't know my son even needed, because I was still trying to hold on to him so tightly that I didn't care whether he got his driver's license or moved out, because I didn't care if he stayed with us forever. I still was trying to make up for past when we got divorced in the first place. So he has his driver's license now. He's becoming his own person, and he's kicking it, you know. But I had to let go in order for that to happen.
Don't you have to unparent?
Yeah. Even with the meningitis, I see that as a gift in that I learned that I didn't have to settle for less anymore. I learned that it, you know, the more medication I was being put on, and I kept going back to the doctor and saying, you know, they gave me anti-anxiety and antidepressants so I could even deal with the fact that I didn't know what I was doing, trying to function and learn words again and all that. So they'd cover it up and mask it with antidepressants, and I got to the point where it was getting worse, and I finally said, I need more. I need more medication, because this is not working. I couldn't even function. And then I just woke up one day and I'm like, no, I don't. If I have to live in this situation and I know, and I have to keep increasing the medication to live life, then something in my life needs to change. And that was for me to get the heck out of there and learn to live, you know. And in praying for answers, then came you. So that was my unexpected gift as well. So anything else?
Different subject for Sunday.
I know. But it's been on our mind, and we just thought we'd share, because I feel like there's always a reason in the things we talk to when we're given those kind of subjects and topics and it's weighing heavily on us. Guarantee you that there's someone else out there who needs to hear it too.
Well, if you notice the difference between this podcast and the one we did the other day, the other two obviously different subjects. One from Friday was unrehearsed.
Yeah.
This one wasn't rehearsed, obviously, but it was. We did have notes on it, and it had a serious topic of discussion. You know, one that warrants revisit from time to time to remind you that, hey, you are more capable of things than you thought.
Yeah.
You are stronger than you know. You are more beautiful than you know. You got this.
Yeah. And we all need to show a little compassion and grace and humbleness and humility in honoring that person's, you know, it's tough to reach out and to say, I need help. So I think we need to have a little patience in with that person also and say, you got this, I believe in you. Let them feel like they have a little bit of say-so and strength still. Let them spread their wings a little bit, but also be there to catch them when they fall.
Yeah.
So
now that's really all we can do as humans is be there for when they fall, hold them up when they're not quite strong enough, and then encourage them when they can soar.
Yeah.
It's really all we can do.
Yeah. And I read a quote right before we left. It said, sometimes we're tested not to show our weaknesses, but to discover our strengths. And I think there's always a reason behind our pain. It's turning it into a purpose and helping others, you know. And
lesson behind the pain.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily what did I do wrong, but more like, what can I do better?
Yeah.
No better.
That's right. So this has been a journey of self-discovery, finding strength in weakness.
That's a good title, huh?
Yep. That was the perfect title for what we were talking about. So hope you guys have an awesome week. Happy Easter, everybody. For those of you who are celebrating Easter, We are sitting by the lake in the sunshine talking to you guys, and hopefully anything we've said has maybe struck a chord and will help you in your next journey of self-discovery, no matter what you're facing right now.
Have a good weekend.
This is Sadie with the Daily Escape Podcast.
Steve and St. Clair with the Crafted Quilt Podcast.
And this has been Have Coffee, We'll Travel Sunday edition. See you on the flip side.